Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
So this is Kathy Smith, and I'm here with another, it's actually August the 21st, 2021. I'm here with another baseball story. And today I have Deborah and Chuck Chambers and Debbie and Dennis Smith with me here today. And they're going to tell us all about their experiences with Lee Summit Baseball. Would you start off, Dennis, please?
Well, I had two sons that played sports, and we probably started about 1978 or so, and the first one was born in 73, so started out with that and coached baseball in Lee Summit in the LSBA Association, and had the opportunity to coach, and also served on the board for a period of time. It was just a great experience. A small town at that time, probably less than 30,000 people in Lee Summit, and the Lee McKeegan Ball Field was the entertainment for the majority of all those that had young men and who played the sport. Had great sponsorships from the different local businesses here in town, and we basically spent our summers at the ball field, either watching a ball game or having practice somewhere or something to that nature.
Well, I understand from our conversation before we began recording that you actually played baseball here in Lee Summit. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had the opportunity. I was born and raised here in Lee Summit, and during the late 50s and all of the 60s, played baseball here and had basically in town teams, and many of my teammates went on to be coaches when it became LSBA. I honestly can't tell you if I don't think it was called LSBA when I was playing. I had to go back and really do some research on that, but it's kind of interesting. And some of the conversation that Kathy's having with us, I know that Russ Weber he was a pitcher and I was a catcher, and we all grew up here together. And then he ended up, I don't think he ever coached, I'm aware of, but he was over all the umpires for the Little League Baseball. All his boys played Little League Baseball. It was just a small town, and kind of everybody just.
So do you remember who your coach was?
One of my coach that I first really remember was George Whiting. That's how I learned how to be I kind of got stuck, and that's the best position it is, of being a catcher. But George Whiting, who was a local businessman here, and his son, his also name was Dennis. We all went to church together and so forth, and so yeah, he was my first baseball coach. I can't remember the gentleman's first name, but Mr. Bonnickson. Mr. Bonnickson worked at Western Electric, and he coached my softball team, or coached our baseball team. So that must be the car. So
that's all right. We'll go along with it. And the dinging on the mm-hmm. clock too. Oh. So what company sponsored your team? Do you remember?
Sponsored the teams that I coach?
No, the team that you were.
Yeah, I do remember, because I get teased about it. It was the House of Charms. It was a local beauty shop here in town.
Did they have a nickname, acronym for them, the Pink something or other?
Not that I remember. Not that I remember. We just we played teams against Dave Cross Motors. They sponsored a team. But I do remember, because we got teased about being sponsored by a local beauty shop. That's what we called them back then, was beauty shops, not salons. So, but yeah, that was those were good times. And we played our games basically at that time. I can remember at Westview, And where the Lee Summit, I call it the water park now, where the water slide and all that is, that was a baseball diamond. In fact, that was back in the day, for my time, that was also where the Lee Summit High School baseball teams, played.
Right, when it was called, it was Howard Park first in City Park,
right, yeah.
And then Harris.
Harris Park. Yeah. And all those parks are named, after ancestors of Lee Summit. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So can you tell me just about some of your games and the most exciting game that you remember playing?
It was fun. We played. The one I gained, I don't know how fun it was, is we just played, but we had a game, we got in some tournament somewhere, somehow. Again, I was a kid at the time, didn't care, just as long as I could play. And we played up at Atherton, Missouri, down in the bottoms. It's kind of like the Field of Dreams as you see it today, but it was cornfields all around us. And I was a catcher, and it was a doubleheader. And I'm not like Salvador Perez that gets a day off or anything, so I got to catch two baseball games in probably 100 plus degree weather down in the cornfields back in the day, and that would have been in the mid to late 60s. So yeah, it was fun. We just had a good time. It was a small town. We didn't travel all over places to play. You knew the kids on the other team. You went to school with them or went to church with them, and the parents, you know, they were all there and supportive. So.
So, where did you buy your equipment from?
Well, I was fortunate. My parents bought the equipment, so I really don't know. We used wood bats. There was no metal bats. I know that's when the way real baseball used to be played. we had wood bats. Uniforms were provided for us. We did have to buy our athletic supporters and those kind of things. But again, the jerseys were, there were people in businesses in town that provided the jerseys. There wasn't a whole lot of shopping, so there was no Walmarts or those kind of things back in the day. So I really can't answer where
like beauty shops and stuff, like House of Charms.
No, I'm talking about what she wanted to know, where I got my uniforms.
Gateway, remember? Oh, yeah, Gateway.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought you meant who gave
no,
it to. Oh, okay.
No, yeah. So the things that we had to buy, like our gloves, our my catcher's glove, and all those kind of things.
Jerry's Sporting Goods.
Yeah, Jerry's Sporting Goods, yeah. And some of that. But there wasn't a whole lot of stores just here in town where you could go purchase those kind of things that you had to buy yourself.
And so did Coach Whiting kind of educate you on how to take care of your catching equipment and making the pocket and all that.
Making
kind of
a pocket, oil on that glove down, and the thing, and I don't know if they do it today. I taught when I coached baseball, and we did it at that time. I don't know at that time. It was hard to do. You take that expensive $25 at that time catcher's mitt or whatever it was, you took a 5 gallon bucket of water. Yep. You put balls or something in the, I don't remember what it was exactly, you wrapped a rubber band around it and you put it down in soaked it in that 5 gallon bucket of water to loosen it up, and that's what you did. And I don't know what they do today. They probably have some kind of special cream and stuff that they use. But
so, what brand was your catcher's mitt?
Wilson's. That was basically there. There was, did you bring that up now? There was a gentleman here in town who worked for Wilson's. He was also an NFL football official, but he worked for Wilson's Sporting Goods. So back in those days, and he had a son that was several years older than me, and played sports. But he provided a lot of access to getting equipment and stuff through, because his day job was working with Wilson Sporting Goods, and that was Jack Fetty, Jack then became an NFL official. And that's where, I know we're talking baseball, but that's where many of the guys that stay on the sidelines, even to this day, 50 some years later, that were hired to run the sticks and all that.
The chains
came from their contact with Jack Fetty and his son Rick Fetty, who everybody seemed to know. But
is Rick Fetty still around?
Rick Fetty's alive. He was probably a good 8 years older than I am. I graduated in 69. He would have graduated probably in like 60. He probably would have graduated in 63. He graduated from some of the, he was gone before even the guys that were 4 years older than I were. So, but we could find out where he's located.
In the part of the athletic wall, it was a cool leather jacket that was donated by someone who graduated in 1956. And I took it down to Summit Sports and they told me it was a Wilson. And it was probably the best one they'd ever seen. So I wondered if Jack Fetty had anything to do with providing
there was it. When we all got our letter jackets and stuff for our different sports in high school, I can't remember where I got my letter. I don't know if we went over to Jerry Sports, and that was in Grandview.
That's where we got it.
But it may have been there where through Jack Fetty. I mean, Jack was still...
He was a firefighter, wasn't he?
Jack worked for Wilson's Sporting Goods, sold equipment. So he might have been a firefighter back in the very first days that I remember Lee Summit, when the whole fire department was voluntary. Mm-hmm. And if the fire alarm went off, the guys all left their businesses in downtown and jumped on the fire truck and went and fought fire. So
so let's get back to the, so you're now playing Little League, and so mm-hmm. you've told us about you're playing down in Atherton and mm-hmm. the potato bottoms, that's mm-hmm. what it's called down there.
Yeah, and so the cornfields at that time.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool that you start thinking about that.
Oh, yeah, I was telling somebody the other day about that when they were complaining about the heat. I said, don't complain about the heat, because I remember that game as well as I can. So, yeah.
And then when you got into, did you play? Baseball in high school?
I played baseball. I didn't play for the first year or so of when I was in high school, and from 66 through 69, 65 I guess through 69, we didn't have baseball. Then they brought baseball back, but I ran track, so I did not. But I played in the summers. I played on some. Sounds good. Some select team that was put together. And some of these guys remember it better than I was. Who's works up at? Used to work with him at Coors.
J.M.
Taylor. J.M.'s a long time. We played sports together. I was a catcher. He was a pitcher. There are several of those guys that play, but we didn't travel far. But we played in the Kansas City metropolitan area, and we were like, because of Missouri high school athletic rules, you can't be playing in the same season that there is. So we would do, it's really kind of after we had graduated from high school for a couple of years or so, we played.
So it'd be like almost like Ben Johnson. Is that?
Yeah, I never tried out for Ben Johnson. But probably wouldn't have been good enough to play Ben Johnson. I have friends who played for Ben Johnson, but you kind of got to pursue that, I think, a little bit. They come hunt you out too. But I never did play Ben Johnson. It was just more of a team put together, and we had a pretty good team, but it wasn't Ben Johnson.
Okay, so then you got married, started a family. So what? When did you begin the coaching career as the dad?
Well, my oldest son was born in 1973.
And what's his name?
Jeff Smith. Okay. We started out with T-ball. I didn't coach him, and I actually coached my other son, who was younger, Jeremy Smith, who was born in 1976.
That would have been in the 80s.
So it was been more in the 80s when I coached Jeremy. Because then you start out with T-ball. Jeff started out with, I think somebody's giving you that name, you may have already talked about Ed Fitzgerald and Mike. It was the coach for, I'm also 70. Cliff Howard. His son's name was Mike. Yeah. They coached him in T-ball.
Oh, excuse me.
coached Jeff in T-ball, kind of up through. Chuck, who you're going to interview here pretty soon, he had the opportunity later on. We went through different leagues, and Chuck, you're going to tell me on this. It started out with T-ball, then I think it was Mustang.
Yeah.
Then it was
Bronco,
and then Pony was the...
Yeah, and then Will. I don't remember what they called the high school guys.
Yeah, yeah.
What did they call the high school guys?
But it all went on age, basically.
2 years, yeah.
You play basically for 2 years.
9 and 10 was Mustang, and then 11 and 12, 13, 14, and then 15 up.
One of the things I do remember when I started coaching, which is there was no Legacy Park. You found where you could practice wherever it might be. And sometimes those were hard to do. Speaking of Jeff, who I did not coach, but Fitzgerald's lived over on the corner of Chipman and
Donovan,
and had a huge backyard, the house still there. And I can remember many a night sitting over there watching them practice. I mean, they had a big enough yard, it was really kind of like a baseball field. They could have the practice there. Probably one of the biggest challenges, though, was when you coach baseball, was to find a place to practice. And we would practice two times a week, and then whenever we had the games.
That's where John came in.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, those are things that, remember that I talked to you about this other day, but when I watched July 17th, 1981, and the recap of the Hyatt disaster, I wasn't coaching, so it must have been Jeff's team, whoever he was playing for at that time. There was not a diamond at Leah McKeegan. They were playing on a makeup field down, probably it was behind the underground water tower there somewhere.
By the railroad tracks over the bridge on Chipman, there was a little field down.
Yeah.
So they were playing a game, and we sat there as parents and hear all these sirens and fire trucks and police cars and all this stuff going. And we're going, oh, Lord, where are they going? And we all come home and turn on our TVs and the Hyatt thing's going on. It brought back memories when I watched that thing other day on TV as it commemorated that event. So...
So tell me about some of the games when we were coaching, some of the exciting games that you had.
Fortunately, I always had great kids, that pretty good athletes. And we usually were in the thick of things every year in a championship game. And I just kind of remember the funny things that went on. I coached Jeremy in Ollie's baseball, and Jeff... Jeff is coached by some other guys. I couldn't do both, and I coached Jeff in basketball, so in league basketball. Anyway, Jeremy was a pitcher, and he was not finding the plate, and we're down on, I'm going to cry. We were down on diamond four. You got to know Jeremy. Great kid, but he went on up and deliberately threw the ball over the backstop. And I looked over at Bill Palumski, who was one of my assistant coaches, and I said, you go get him, because if I go out there, it ain't going to be pretty. So
he'll deny it to the
he'll
day.
Deny it, but
he
no,
did it on
he,
purpose.
He leaned back and threw that thing. Another time is we're in a championship game. And we're playing another team, can't remember the name of the team, but they have twins on there, and they're the Woolly twins.
Yeah.
I don't remember their first name.
What was their name? Sean and Wayne.
And they were pretty good. And we're talking now, these kids are, where they're probably in like the Mustang, which is the next step.
Because they're my Jeff's age.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, next step up. They were Jeremy's age. Yeah. Next step up. So we're in a championship game, and they're good. We played them that year, in just a regular season. And we won that game 2-1. You remember those kind of scores? And that night, after the game, we all loaded up and went to the lake. probably with them. I don't remember if you all were there, but we had, that's where we were going on vacation. It was the last game of the season, and well, you didn't have much time, so you, I remember winning that game. Jeremy didn't want to catch. He still pitched, but he was a catcher. He was a good little catcher. But I remember winning that championship and loading. We didn't even, well, I think we may have come home.
I think it was after 10 o'clock before we even
got on the road. Yeah, got on the road. Yeah. We met some, we got another couple, probably the boys that you're going to talk to, down at Table Rock, and where we'd go. And we loaded up and got down to Table Rock about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after we had played that ball game. But I remember him. He'd shaved his head. He thought that was really cool, because it would be cooler if he had to be that darn catcher and not pitch. That's part of the game that stands out. But we won. And when you're talking about, what were those kids, 10 or 11 years old, when you win a ball game 2-1, I mean, there's some, and especially against the team that we, I mean, they, I can't remember if it was Sean or the other one. One of them was a really good pitcher. And it was up on Diamond 3. Diamond 4 is down by Chipman Road. Diamond 3 is right next door to it. And I can remember being, because it's a little elevated, I can remember that. So
that's really wonderful. That's what I'm finding on these interviews. People are very emotional.
Well,
about that.
I'm not usually emotional.
But, you know, but so let me tell you something. I like that. That's the whole thing. It's the heart of it. It really is. So, you know.
There's other memories I cry about on that baseball diamond. But we're not going there, okay? Yeah, there's other memories playing baseball. Okay. But no. But I can, when you start talking about things, then you can visualize that.
Yeah.
Well, stands were full. My mom and dad probably came to air, and they're both gone now, but my mom and dad came to almost air. I mean, they had two boys, and they really couldn't come to all of them. But I can remember them being there at that ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And we loaded up. And
well, and talking about that, there was one time that we did go to the lake with Chambers and with Boyd.
Yeah.
And Bill Boyd at that time, he had his pilot's license. And I can remember we were down there, and he would load up his son Ryan and Chuck, and to fly him home because we went down the only time we could get this reservation or whatever. There were still games going on. It was the championship, so I mean it was at the end of the season. But anyway, and they actually left one day in the plane and flew up here to play a ball game at Lee McKeegan, and then flew back down that night.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, that's how dedicated
that's
these
right.
guys
that's
were.
That's right. That's the big
you know.
Time.
Yeah. Because, you know, nowadays it's like, oh, sorry, we're not going to be there. We're going to be on vacation with our family. You know, back then you didn't take a vacation if you were playing
and
ball.
That hadn't changed much, because I can remember kind of going back from my coaching to when I played. I was in Boy Scouts, Troop 220. I think that's the only troop in Lee Summit. I think there's some others, but that, you know. Troop 220, and I go to Osceola every year, or when I was a kid. And I can remember twice that my dad drove to Osceola and brought me back to a game and then took me back. And Osceola's not a 15-minute trip. So,
yeah.
But again, those were back in the old days, but that's just kind of, we didn't travel all over like some of my grandkids do now, playing sports, travel all over the United States playing. We might get on a plane, somebody have a plane and fly back for a ball game, or load you in the car and take you to Osceola, or get in the car afterwards and get to take that one vacation. Because your vacation most time in Lee Summit in the summer for the kids that play baseball was Lee McKeegan.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we were at. That's what we did.
And so was your dad an athlete?
No, he grew up during the war, and his dad, my grandpa, passed away when he was a sophomore in high school, and they lived on a farm. They owned all the farmland out there west of Hook Road, his sister, who's much younger, of course I wasn't around, was one of them, was quite the.
So what was her name?
Betty Marie Smith at that time. And the reason I really know much about that is, and he just passed away last week, a very dear friend of ours, and probably you probably knew him through the journal, was Jim Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
And Jim, lifelong resident here, and Jim goes to our church, and he would tell me, he said, you're, because he was quite a basketball player. They were the same age. Your aunt was quite a basketball player. And he's the one that, only reason I ever kept, and no offense to you, because I didn't even know you did this, but we hung on to the journal as long as we could here at home. I'd had it, but then it came one page of Lee Summit mm-hmm. News, and the rest of it became
yeah.
something.
Can't say Star,
but I always read it. Because Jim Carpenter had the historical thing in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So when Russ Pulley fired him as the according to Jim, when Russ Pulley fired him as the from the paper, that's when I go, okay, I'm not taking the drawing
board. I don't blame you there.
But anyway, that, so no, my dad was not he was not an athlete.
We never took the Star. We took, I mean, we did, but. Always the journal.
Yeah.
So do you feel like George Whiting was your, besides your dad, of course, was your really first mentor in growing up, you know, trying to
teach? No, my dad was always my mentor, but, okay. but as far as sports go, that's how I became a catcher. He didn't say, you're going to catch. I just volunteered, and mm-hmm. he was very supportive. So I'd say my... The one, and when you really got older, and you started all, because we'd have meetings at their house, and he had a big was, and I cannot for the life of me, lived in Village Fair, cannot for the life of me, his son Paul Boddington was a year ahead of us in school, but I can't remember his dad.
Boddington, I can't think of his
first name, but he probably was because we would, he had a felt board. I can remember going over there, and I would have been in junior high at that time, had a felt board. And it would have still been, I don't have to call it LSBA, but it was still kind of the same baseball thing. Have felt bored, and he would, we got a runner on first base. There's one out. Infielders, what do you, if it's a ground ball, what are you thinking about doing? Or,
Harold
Bonnick. So he's been gone a long time. I could take you to the house he lived
but
over.
His son's still alive.
Worked for Western Electric, because a lot of these guys, and Chuck, mm-hmm. a lot of these, When it really became popular, a lot of these people, when Western Electric was built and opened in 1963, or 62 or 63, and where Village Fair is, that kind of became, I always called it the company town a little mm-hmm. bit, because Village mm-hmm. Fair kind of came up, if you know where Village
yes,
Fair is,
I do.
It kind of came about the same time that the Western, big huge Western, hired 7,000 people that's in its prime, what was built. So, but I remember being over in that house, and we would, he'd have that on the days that we weren't on the field somewhere practicing, he would be doing the I can remember that he had a felt board, and he'd move things around, and we'd have to mm-hmm. strategize on
situational baseball.
Yeah. So yeah, he was more a mentor. Besides baseball, this town, there was a lot of mentors for us who grew up here in this town. I mean, it wasn't only just sports. It was just a cool town. And you had to be careful what you did, especially when you became a teenager, because everybody knew. They may not know you're really good, but they knew your name, you know.
They knew your parents.
They knew your parents.
Yeah.
And they knew, we knew our neighbors.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
This is a horrible thing to say. I can't tell you the neighbor across. I can tell you that neighbor, but I can't tell you that. Now, we've lived here 35 years. Now, they've come and gone. Some have come and gone. I can't tell you the neighbor across the street. I can tell you the neighbor next door because he just moved in a couple, 3 years ago. I know the kids behind because I had his mother and when I was a teacher. But we don't know our neighbors anymore.
We know more than you think.
And the people that... We used to live there. I pulled them out of the fire.
They've been gone a long time.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So.
Huh?
No cuss.
Well, I didn't know it.
Yeah. So no, I mean that. But at least Summit, you knew
My daughter was McCabe.
People. I mean, you may not know them personally.
That was a night.
Oh
Well, that's what they, when I was in some of these other interviews, that's what folks tell me, you know, that 3 nights a week in the summertime, everybody in Lee's Summit was up there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, whether you had a child in there playing.
People go there. We stopped by there one time, years ago.
We need to get life.
No kids. We stopped there to eat at the concession stand.
Well, we stopped just to sit there and watch a game.
Walked up to some people we knew. I don't remember who they were. They go, "What the heck are you doing here?" We're going, "Well, we both used to be here at times. We just stopped by to get a sandwich and see what the park was like." I mean,
that was our social life in the summer. Sure.
Like I say, we got in a truck. A pickup truck and went to the lake after a ball game one time. They flew back for a ball game and flew back down there. Mm-hmm. That's just what you did. And the kids all kind of knew each other. There weren't three high schools. There was one high school. There was one junior high. There was maybe four or five elementary schools at that time, not 18 or 19 elementary schools. Mm-hmm. Church or through whatever, you knew each other as kids. You kind of knew each other.
And we knew all their parents.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
Even our daughter, who is, 5 years younger than our youngest boy, we didn't even know all her. I mean, that's how much it grew just in that length of time, that we didn't know all of her friends' parents. We knew, but not like, we didn't hang out with them like we did at the ball fields and things like that. It's just totally different.
And then they made lifelong friends.
For sports. Our boys still.
Jeremy
get
comes
together.
Back. Jeremy, the one I guess we got a truck out there. The one that lives in St. Louis, he comes back. He comes back several times, but he comes back every year to play in a golf tournament out at Lakewood with a bunch of guys that he grew up with in high school and played sports with in growing up and stuff.
Yeah, they still get together. Yeah,
so, I guess that's wonderful.
It's a bond that. It's similar to the police department or army. You have this thing as a group of people or a group of young men who have accomplished. You never forget that.
Yeah.
Never.
So what do you think about today? Do you think there's not...
I don't think they have that. Talking to our grandkids that have gone to school here, and they've gone out to Lee's Summit West, they don't even know all the kids in their class.
And don't mind just like some West. It's all.
No, but I'm saying that's where ours went.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the other high schools are just the same. And to me, that is just so sad. And they don't feel like, like you said, they don't have the pep clubs. They don't have those kind of things. And I just don't feel like unless you're an athlete or a cheerleader or something like that, I think they just don't have that, sense of, they don't have that sense of belonging or, doing things. I mean, they have their own
little
groups.
This is the greatest thing in the world and the worst thing in the world.
That's the whole thing. Yeah. Our kids didn't have that crap.
No.
So you either play baseball or you sit and...
Jeff and Jeremy and Jeff took your lawnmower and... made a baseball field behind
us. Yeah, because we didn't have houses back here.
And I was kind of, as much as I love sports, I was kind of a yard fanatic. And I said, you got a vacant lot behind you.
You don't need to kill the grass in our yard.
You can play back here. That's also another good point. Pat Matheny, Mike Matheny, I grew up one street over from them. Mike Matheny, who was a great musician also, but... There's a greenhouse sits on the corner of 3rd Street and Lakeview. That house wasn't there when I was growing up. So Mike Matheny, Jim Wimburn, we played baseball by the hours on that corner lot, hitting home runs across the 3rd Street into an old lady's house. She was very understanding. But we would put, and over in the garage, at that time he played drums. And like when we were like in high school, he was in like junior high, was Pat Matheny, who's won all these Emmys, Grammys, beating on those drums, writing music for the Lee Summit High School band in here. And Mike was quite a musician too, but we played, it was baseball. Well, we played in that vacant lot We mowed. I don't even know who owned the vacant lot. We mowed the base paths, mm-hmm. and played baseball. McKee Lumber, used to be McKee Lumber. His son, one of his sons, a year old. We played baseball by the hours down there.
Mm-hmm. So were there any girls that played?
No, we always try to invite some girls to come watch us, but
of course.
Now, up on the other corner, on Lakeview and 4th Street, there was a house which was the Burton Motors guy owned, and in between that house and where Frank Kaiser lived, he was the head musician of
Carl Frank Kaiser.
Was ahead. There was a vacant lot, and we would play wiffle ball up there. And there was a cute little gal, classmate of ours, called Judy Klingenpeel, and she had something wrong with her ankles or something.
She had numerous surgeries on her legs.
And I can remember we guys would wheel her down so she could watch us play. And she had brothers, and we would at times play wiffle ball. In this vacant lot between the guy who owned Burton Motors and Frank Kaiser, who lived. I grew up on the poor street called Highland. Lakeview is the rich street where there was the first concrete street in Lee Summit. But the McKees and the Matheny's and Dr. Underwood, who was assistant.
Dr. Bell.
They all lived on Lakeview. So, but anyway. I don't know how I got off on that story. Keep me here. I'm as old as dirt. Yeah. See,
I mean, that's really the thing, the neighborhood baseball, you know, it kept your skills honed for when you're actually going to play a game, you know, and made you think about strategies and things like that.
It's helped me as a grandfather, too, mm-hmm. because my... Here I go again.
Okay. No, you're good.
Never do this.
My mom's... my dad's... father, my had passed. He had a heart attack. It's a Smith curse. He'd passed away when my dad was like a sophomore in high school. My mom's father, who owned all the Knobtown. That's a whole nother story. But he would come when I was little. He would come to all my baseball games, and then afterwards, we go downtown to Lane McAdoo's. Best. Soda jerks had the best soda jerks in the world, and he'd buy me a milkshake.
Oh gosh.
But he would come to those games. And my grandma really wasn't able to, or she probably didn't have much interest really. I mean, she interested me, but not much interested in the
mm-hmm. sports.
But no, I can remember. So my kids, you know, well we would go do those kind of things too when the
sure. When it becomes traditional in a family.
Yeah.
And now I wonder how it is. I mean, they have big old legacy park. And
Chuck can tell you that after ball games, sometimes we would go over and another couple would go, and this guy Boyd forget his money. Remember how many times we had to buy Boyd's dinner because he'd forget his money.
Drove all the way over to the original smokestack.
More money both of those put together.
Yeah, he made more money than both of those put together.
That's
why. In fact, I used to start, and there were no credit cards back then. I used to tell them, I got to get some more money because they're going to probably go get something to eat afterwards because Boyd will forgot his bill phone. And you can tell him I said it because I've told him before.
So if you could sum up your experience as a player and a coach, what would you say?
If I would pick...
Some kind of a summation of your experiences as a player, a coach here in Lee Summit.
I think it... Number one, it rounded me out as a young man in the time and to be able to play and think about people who supported you, and then to know that you hopefully touched. You never know it till later in life. Mm-hmm. What lives you touch. I knew that. There's been kids as when I taught that I never had a clue have come up to me and go, you did this or did that. I don't even know what I did. And I'm hoping that I did some of that for kids that I coach baseball in. Okay. Again, my mentors, and like I say, my mentors were probably more in baseball, more than just baseball. And things like this really bring back very positive memories.
Sure. And that's the reason why we want to preserve these stories, because they are important.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, that's Doug Havridge.
I'll just decline, honey.
Okay, I don't know how to do that. I just used to have a real phone and do it.
Okay, Debbie, it's your turn.
Well, I don't have the answers to it because obviously I was just a baseball mom who loved going and watching my boys play and cheer for them and encourage them and wash baseball uniforms and. So, and you know, like we've already stated, you know, that in the summer, that was our life. You know, that was our social life. Those are the people that we associated with, that we did things with, you know, and we knew all the parents of, you know, all the kids, because it was just a much smaller community. And, you know, we played or we worked in the concession stand. You know, we all signed up to do that and took our turns doing that. And, you know, other than just being there to support them and cheer for them, and
worse, a lot of uniforms.
And you know, that's really all I can say. I mean, you know, I do remember though, because I kind of see our kids now. When, and of course, our kids are, grandkids are most of them in college now. But you know, we never had fast food back then. You know, I would come home from work, Dennis would come home from work, we would sit down and eat dinner, and then they'd go to practice, or, you know, or if we had a game that night, you know, it was our treat that we would eat at the concession stand. You know, you got a hot dog with sauerkraut on it and nachos, you know, that was your dinner. But, you know, we did. We always ate as a family, and some nights you had practice before I got home, so then we'd eat later. But, you know, I don't have I have memories of being out there and watching them and cheering for them and, you know, just loving it. You know, and you never, you know, we'd be there late at night sometimes, you know, when they have to turn the lights off, like 11 o'clock, I think, you know.
You have an 8 late game.
Yeah, if you had a late game, I mean, you were there. You didn't stay home and say, okay, you guys tell me about the game. I mean, you were there supporting them. And then, like I said, we had a daughter who was quite a bit younger who, I do remember when she turned 5 or 6, whenever she could have played powder puff t-ball, we were in the car on our way up to sign her up, and halfway up there she says, "You know, I really don't want to do this." She said, "I spent so many years sitting on the bleachers. I'm just..." So she was never an athlete. You know, so that's your choice. You know, whatever. She danced. She didn't do sports. But you know, she was out there with us every night. And like Dennis said, when he was telling you about the night of the Hyatt when we were out there, she was born in April and the Hyatt was in July. And, you know, so she was there in her infant seat and we came home to another house and, you know, then saw it on TV. But, you know, I didn't miss a game because, you know, she was a baby. I mean, you know, we just loaded her up and she went with us. And, you know, then as she got a little bit older, she sat there and played in the dirt like all the other little sisters did, you know. You know, that's what I remember. It was just a fun time, and it was just a much smaller community. And you know, I'm all for progress. I mean, I think it's good when communities grow, but you do miss that. You really miss that, knowing everybody. We used to, you know, go to the store or go out to dinner or whatever, and you would always run into somebody you know. And now it's like, my gosh, where did all these people come from? You know, you don't know half of them.
What was that restaurant? If I started getting restaurants, it was up here where the Italian place is now.
What was it before? It was Heroes. Heroes, and it was
anyway. Kind of the first, not fast food, but that was first kind
we
of.
We just didn't have, or Shoney's. You know, there used to be a Shoney's where that bank was down here. We'd go eat at Shoney's. You know, we just didn't have. So that's what I remember. I just remember that was our summer. You know,
so tell me about your. So are you a lifelong resident of Lee Summit?
No, I moved here when I was 10. I was in the fourth grade. And I had two brothers. I'm the oldest. I had two brothers. They did not play baseball. They played tennis. My two brothers are engineers.
if that tells God, I don't want them in. No, no. They just, you know, sports was just not a big thing to them, other than, like I said, they did play tennis when they were in high school. But you know, and like I said, I played some summer stuff when I was like in eighth grade. But then again, you know, we didn't, when I was in high school, we didn't have girls sports. So, you know, I didn't, I mean, I went and supported, you know, I was on the drill team in high school and, you know, cheered at all the games and did all of that. But I did not have the opportunity to play sports. So, so I'm not real athletic. I enjoy sports, but, so that's, like I said, that's my memory is just, you know, hanging out with good friends and being with the kids.
So, introduce yourself, sir.
Hi, I'm Chuck Chambers. We moved to Lee Summit in 1985, I think. Mm-hmm. I grew up playing baseball in Raytown. That's where my hometown is. I have two boys that played, and I didn't coach Jeff the first year of his T-ball, but then after I saw who was coaching him, I decided, okay, I'll do it. Because I wasn't the kind of person that was probably good for my boys to coach them. And I knew that going in, because if anybody knows me, it was intense. Our games were intense. I mean, I made them intense. But it worked out pretty good. And we had some really, really great kids and winning teams. We just won teams, and a lot of people didn't like us because we would always beat them, and we would beat them big. And then when I moved to Lee Summit, John was my stepdad, John O'Brien. He was pretty intense too, but he was kind of the catalyst of Lee Summit baseball at that time. He worked his ass off. He would get off of work and go drag fields. We would, in the off season, we build fields. We built batting cages, we built fields. He spearheaded all that. So I can remember Saturdays after the season where we were stringing backstops on any lot that they would let us have. And so he, because he wanted everybody to have a practice field. And then he retired from Western Electric. Every day he did the same thing. He'd go drag them all. Practice fields and all. He didn't want anybody getting hurt. He wanted them all to be, you know, everything was like you were just in a little league World Series. So, and that's kind of how. And then my coaches were great. John was one of our coaches, and then Bill Boyd, who we talked about earlier, was pretty intense too. Our team was fairly intense as far as we expected to win. We worked so hard at it. We did. We probably practiced every day. Somewhere.
What position did you play?
Me, I was a catcher and a shortstop, but my boys were pretty much that too. Scott was a catcher, my youngest, and Jeff was an outfielder. So I didn't coach Jeff after 13. At 13 and 14, I let him go because he went with his friends and wanted to play with them, so which worked out pretty good. But I don't know. It was great. And like Dennis was saying, I still can walk into Quick Trip and somebody will go, "Hey, coach." And, you know, it's somebody that I had coached in at that time. So, and that makes you feel good, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're always like, "Oh, you remember." Yeah. Well, I don't. That was so good. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, I do. I don't want to hurt the feelings. Yeah. Yeah, but I love that. I love that part of it. I think that's the thing that I like the best is them coming up after all those years and just, you know, "Hey, coach." It's always coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I've been hearing from other folks too, that they really love that their kids can come up to them.
Yeah.
You know, the coach might be 80 years old and they coached a kid when he was 7 or 8
right.
years old, but they still remember.
Well, I know when I always told my parents, or we always have a first parent meeting, first practice, I always told my parents, don't plan a vacation. If you don't want to practice, this is not the team for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now's the time to say it. If you got a problem with me, bring it to me. Don't bring it to your kid. And we're gonna win the championship. So don't be planning a vacation until it's over. And they all kind of like giggle, but I just knew we weren't gonna lose. We just weren't gonna lose. And you know, we just outworked everybody. Really, we just did. I know we built the batting cages. I don't remember what it was, but I always had a standing. We would go to the batting cages on Sunday, and it was usually closed, but John, you know, could get it open. And if somebody else would show up, our kids would go, oh no, another team, because I wouldn't leave before they did. if we were there, we'd have been there an hour, and somebody pulls up, I'd say, we're not leaving until they leave. We're not packing up and leaving until they, so they'd bat, and they'd leave, and then we'd be done. But I would not. I just, weird little things like that.
So where were the batting cages?
Up by Lee McKeegan.
Okay.
Where the ice rink is.
Okay.
So yeah, we that was all volunteer. We poured so much concrete and built that all. So.
So who subsidized that? I mean,
John. I mean, the Lee Summit Baseball Association paid for it, but he was always the. You know, he got everybody together. He got the electricians together. And most of them were dads.
Right.
You know, everybody in Lee Summit at that time had some sort of, you could do this, or you could plumb, or you could, and so they would, I'll be there. Or, you know, and it was basically be 15 guys pouring concrete, you know, at the end of the season, so that our kids would have batting cages. John was my stepdad for, until we lost him, probably 30 years. He would probably be my mentor as far as that went, athletically. And the things he would do for those kids was just unbelievable. It just was.
I heard that sometimes if kids couldn't afford equipment.
Oh, he would always buy it. He would, nobody would do without nothing. Not anybody would do without nothing. If you had a ratty glove, you would have one, a different one. I think he grew up not having a lot, you know, and he was a good athlete, and he always, he was the best at reweaving a glove. Oh, he was not, he used to do mine every game. We'd use like shoelaces because they couldn't afford leather. And so he would sit there in the dugout and during the game and do that. So
tell me a little bit about his background. Where was he from?
He lived in he grew up in Carthage. He was a farm boy. He grew up in Carthage. He came to Lee Summit to work at Western Electric back in
63. 62 or 63 when
I first opened. And got involved in baseball. Kind of just like he lived in Village Fair, which was just, you know, just kind of all evolved. And a lot of those coaches, early coaches, were Western Electric people. And
Gary Brown
worked at West Electric, and Thompson was his last name. I can't remember his first name.
There was a Gary Thompson, I think.
Yeah, he was one of the original coaches too. But he was just so dedicated to it, so dedicated. And then they start. I don't know if he actually started the Baseball Association or whatever, but he was always the president ever since I knew him. And it was, he was great for my team or our team, his team and my team. We were kind of got co-head coaches, but he didn't favor any. Everybody had a practice field, a time. Like Dennis said, they had to go find something. Well, he made it sure that every team from the top on down, you know, even T-ball had practice fields. And he was out there from dusk to dawn dragging them. You know, my mom used to say he'd leave at sunrise and come back at sunset.
I can remember when you were talking about that. What time? Rainouts were.
Oh yeah.
But I can remember two or three times. And I can remember John being there because I'd never seen this. We pour gasoline.
Yeah, burn it.
Burn the field so we could play ball games.
Well, it just screwed everything up. You know, it just screwed everything up. Yeah. Your whole schedule.
Like we were going out there pouring gas on them. I'm thinking,
they wouldn't be doing that today, would they?
Yeah.
We burned those fields so we could play ball.
I seriously don't think that the family fun and the the things that we had, I mean, that's irreplaceable. It was just at 6:15, you were at the ballpark, or you were there at 8:30, and you knew everybody. Even after the game, you'd stick around. I mean, I never left before 10. Even if I had a 6:15 game, you'd put your stuff away and you'd go watch, and then you'd just walk up and down talking to people. Yeah. There's people you knew, you know, it's like, hey, what, you know.
Kind of walking the streets of downtown.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was just, that was your social life.
You know, yeah. And the there's a book that, on the 50th anniversary of Western Electric, they talk about the pioneers and the dedication of the folks that work there to the mm-hmm. community, and that was actually one of their missions. So do you think that that kind of came from that sense of community that working
there? Well, I mean, it could have. I know my mom worked there too, so yeah, I mean, I'm sure it did, but I think it's one of those things that as they hired the 7,000 people and the city expanded quite a bit at that point, even I wasn't here then, I lived in Raytown, but I think they just all got involved. Because I don't remember hardly, almost all those coaches had something to do with Western Electric, yeah, if I remember right, or something of that nature. So probably was.
Okay. Can you tell me about some of your games that you?
Oh, we had some intense games. We were, I always had really good teams. Probably the biggest highlight for me was my youngest son. We were the Mustang champions for 2 years in a row, but we had a whole group of 9-year-olds, and the best team out there was 10-year-olds. Well, we spread them in the championship game because no nine-year-old team's ever beat a 10-year-old team. You know what I mean? And I just wasn't going to have that happen, and so that's probably my highest point. And then we also won the championship in, I think it was, 12-year-old. We were down 2 runs in the bottom of the 7th, and the guys were all kind of hanging their head, and I said, don't hang your head, dude. I said, we're going to win this game. We're winning it right here. And my worst hitter, Jeff Hocker, my worst hitter was up leadoff. He was my last batter. He absolutely got his first hit of the season in that thing, and then we were at the top of our order, and we got him around. We scored him. We got an out, a couple outs. We had like 2 outs, 2 men on, and Joel Burke, my center fielder, hit one out of the ballpark, and we won the game.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's exciting.
It was exciting. It was, those kids were just, you know, they just, I would never let them, if we got behind, I would just never, we're going to win. We're just seeing what they can do. So, but some people didn't like me for that, but that's okay. But they always wanted their kids to play for us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who were some of the other coaches back when you were coaching?
Oh, geez. Gary Cruz, Crenshaw, Peck, or Gary Crenshaw. I mean, is he still alive?
I was just thinking, I think so.
I just like him. He was crazy.
Yeah, he was
Ron,
crazy.
Remember Ron?
Ron, had the wife.
Gosh, I don't remember all their names.
The Zoller twins, Jerry Zoller.
Zollers.
He'd be a good one to.
Has anybody given you his name?
I don't think so.
Jerry Zoller.
Jerry Zoller, no. Very good.
I'm not sure. So can you?
Okay.
We always used to run into him at the store, but I haven't seen him for a while.
I don't remember all their names that much. I never associated too much with them because they always hated us by the end of the game. it was okay. It was just a good thing. We had fun.
Bob Dennis, did he?
Bob did.
He was older, yeah. He coached for a little while. Yeah.
So did any of your boys go on up to play Legion ball? Or?
Well, my youngest one did, yeah.
Your son? Mm-hmm. And what was his name?
Scott Chambers, okay. Yeah. He played, he was on a traveling team in Legion ball. He was a catcher. Jeff played through high school. Both of them played through high school, but that was kind of about it. By then, they were going to college, and that was just too much. But yeah, it was. And then that was even. I didn't coach him then. I didn't coach him in Legion ball. But he had a really great team.
So. Did they want to play in college?
No, not really.
Kind of burned out a little bit, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because I'm telling you, I had a batting cage in my basement. So we spent a lot of time hitting. So, but it paid off. But, yeah, and I don't know if they would, they both tell me they wouldn't change a thing, but I don't know. It was so much fun. It really was. It was enjoyable.
Okay. Thank you. So tell us your name.
I'm Debbie Chambers, and like Debbie Smith, I'm mostly associated through Chuck and the boys playing baseball. Work concession stand. We all had our lawn chairs. We'd get them out to watch the games. It's either sit up on the hill or down on the sidewalk on field one. But it was fun. I mean, we'd sit there and we talked about everything. Sometimes not even paying much attention other than when the boys were up. And we worked our concession stand duties, and that wasn't bad either.
That was kind of fun, actually.
Yeah. Well, you never worked
it. I did, too. I did, too.
You did, too?
I most certainly did.
Are you from here?
No. I grew up in South Kansas City. Went to Ruskin High School. And we moved out here in 85. And Scott started baseball here.
Here, yeah.
Jeff had played T-ball in Raytown, I believe.
Yeah, at the Y.
At the Y. And then...
horrible.
Yeah. And then we came out here, and Scott and Jeff were always so close to John. They adored him. John always had nicknames they had nicknames for all the boys on their teams. But Jeff was Peacock, and Scott was...
Mule.
And it was...
lived through those boys.
Yeah, he did. He followed everything that they did.
There wasn't nothing they didn't... I mean, football, basketball.
Right, football, basketball.
We went everything. From sport to sport to sport, so...
Yeah. He didn't coach them in the other things, but but he watched everything and kept track of all their stuff. And even, I can remember... Well, I remember one game when the... Scott usually was a pretty good hitter, and he fouled one off. We were on field two, I think, right in the center, and we fouled it back into the parking lot, and we heard glass breaking, and just so happened it was our car.
Yeah.
Broke the windshield out of our car with this foul ball. And I couldn't believe it. It was like, of all the cars out there, crash, it was ours. So, but that was really, it was fun. But yeah, we'd sit up there all night and watch them. And every night that there was a game, it was kind of disappointing when the season was over and we couldn't go up to Lima Keegan anymore and watch the kids play and gossip and do all that stuff. We had a good time.
So was it once your kids got old enough where they didn't play there anymore? That must have been kind of hard not to go.
It was. It was.
Kind of weaning yourself off of that.
I know. Chuck was, he was, when practiced, he got tired of doing it every night. Not so much when the kids were younger, but as they reached the end, he was like, I'm so glad I don't have to go to practice.
Well,
every single night.
I would start at 4:30 because I had the back-to-back practice on the same field. So I would start at 4:30 till 6:30, and then 6:30 to 8:30, the other group would come.
Yeah.
So,
I would fix.
It was a long night.
Yeah, I fixed dinner. We ate dinner as a family, but I would either keep it warm for when they did get home, and we'd all sit down and eat at 9 o'clock at night, or. I'd start fixing it about 8 o'clock because I knew they'd be coming in. Mm-hmm. Game day was different. We usually ate the concession stand or whatever, depended. But most of the games were most of them, it seemed like, were on the weekends. No. I don't know.
No, no one played during the week, too.
Because they were still in school sometimes, and
yeah,
the
Thursday
games got to be 11 by the time you got out of there.
That's true.
Because they never started at 8:30. They started at 9. And that was always a bad thing, because they were like, gosh, they're not going to want to get up and go to school. So, but, and I was on, we probably played, what, 3 weeks before school ever got out? We
started.
We were done like July the 4th.
Yeah, 4th of July.
But then we went in
the All-Star game. It became the All-Star game. And I told you.
Yeah.
Hottest day of the year, always.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
But they played all the different leagues.
Yes, they did.
They all played.
I remember.
So you didn't go anywhere on the 4th of July.
No.
And there were no.
No.
I don't remember any fireworks.
We didn't have them back then.
I don't either.
We just played ball.
Then we
I mean, if you didn't, our kids were fortunate enough to used to be on the All-Star team, or you were coaching an All-Star team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was no.
Yeah. The 4th of July, it was always.
It was always,
always
the hottest.
So hot. I know one, Scott was a catcher. And it was so hot, that last one that I remember. And he got up, and they had the towels that they, cold towels that they put on his neck and everything. And he stood up, and he goes, "Am I supposed to be seeing dots?"
Oh no!
And of course, John and Chuck said, "Yeah, it's fine." Scott broke his thumb catching. Kid slid into him and caught his thumb, and he played with the cast on.
Well, that wasn't hard.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
Yeah, no.
I remember one thing that just came off the top of my head. I always told my boys, said, when you're 80 years old, you're always going to remember that you were the 10-year-old Mustang champions, and you're going to know everybody on your team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you think that's funny, but I can remember when I won championships, you don't forget those people. You just don't. Yeah. We talked about that a little earlier. You're 80 years old, and you're going to be, you know what, we won the 12-year-old championship of Lee Summit. And you're never going to forget that. And that's so important to you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like it, but it is. And I was just so big on that. My other coaches would just shut up and let me talk. But it's true. Mm-hmm. It's just true. And that's where I see the kids that say, "Hey, coach," or "Hey, Quick Trip," or even at restaurants and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. A lot of times, I'll
and
say,
they always
want
to talk about. Remember when I did it, and we would,
and they caught that ball.
That was so awesome. That was so awesome. Mm-hmm. But we would have kids that we worked so hard on our kids that weren't very good, because you know everybody had kids that weren't very good, but they turned out to be really pretty good. It was just a matter of coaching them. And telling them, "You can do this.
You can do this.
Hitting is not hard. Oh, I can't hit." Well, right there's your problem. I was so big on positive. You're going to. And just like we won the championship because my worst hitter got his first hit of the game in the championship game at the bottom of the seventh. That proved my point.
Mm-hmm.
That proved it. Because I told him, I said, "You're going to hit this ball. You're going to hit the right field." And that's what he did. I talked him into it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and he went up there to the plate knowing he was going to get a hit. He was excited.
He was the most excited kid I've ever seen in my life.
And that was worth it right there.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, Jeff Hocker.
Okay.
His dad had an insurance company, right?
He's my insurance agent now, Jeff is. I love the kid. I love the kid.
So that probably gave him the self-confidence
to
continue on in life, really.
It did. Yeah. And I think I did that, you know, and
he
I don't did this with his basketball players and things like that. But it's a life learning. Baseball is life learning.
Yeah.
Really, it is. It's a game, but you learn so much about yourself and what you're willing to put into it and what you're willing to get out of it is tantamount to what you do with the rest of your life. It really is. I believe that.
Oh, I truly believe that too. I think these kids that do sports or any kind of organized thing where you have a mentor coach, I mean, yeah, it does. It gives you life skills, you know.
It does.
It teaches you respect. It teaches you self-confidence. Mm-hmm. It teaches you, you know, so many things that that I think if you're not in organized sports or something like that.
It teaches you how to lose.
Yeah.
How to win.
Yeah.
Well, I have never, none of my kids would ever yell at an umpire. ever look at an umpire and
right.
go, that's not a strike. Because if you did, you didn't play for me.
That's right. You're done.
That's all there is.
Yeah. You're done for that.
Because what anyway. That shouldn't have mattered. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. If you do what you're supposed to do, what we taught you to do, that strike that he called didn't matter. It didn't matter. And so I think that you learn to do that as a young kid. And we'd have coaches go, well, you can't teach those kids how to turn a double play at 9 years old. The hell I can't. I have. I done it. And my kids knew they could do it. Mm-hmm. And they did it.
Yeah, they did. More than once.
I mean, you just, how do you teach 9 year olds to do that? They're only nine. Because you teach them. Mm-hmm. You tell them they can do it. You show them how to do it. You practice it and practice it and practice. And guess what? Boom. They turn a double play. Hell, half the high school kids can't turn a double play.
Or that kid hit the home or hit the hit that never hit it.
Yeah.
He's got eight other guys that are probably 15, but you have about 12, 15 on the team. I mean, it's what team's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
You may not be able to really pitch, but you see how you see what it takes to pitch, and that pitcher probably can't catch or. Not that you can't do anything, but they learn teamwork.
Well, they learn confidence.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's positive confidence.
And the kids are all encouraging him, too.
I mean, none of those kids. Oh, yeah, there was no egos. We had no egos. But you know, if my oldest son or youngest son, Scott, would run into Jeff Hocker, they would talk about that game. I guarantee it. Because every time I see Jeff, he goes, remember that coach? Yeah, brother, you won that for us, man. I mean, Joel Burke won it for us, but if he'd have got out, I don't think we'd have won that game.
Yep.
But the kids saw with me telling him, you're going to get a hit to right, and you're going to do this. They just knew, hey, coach knows what we're doing, man.
And you hit up on it earlier. We had great parents.
Yeah, we did.
And I see on TV, it doesn't happen off, but you see clips, and it happens more, I guess, than what you really see. I mean, parents out there fighting with umpires are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My parents.
I did say,
you shut up. You just sit there and you cheer your kids. You cheer everybody's kids. I don't care what. Don't argue with them. Don't argue with me. Not during the game. Or like I said, you're going to be at every practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Fredericksons I used to have to watch their kid because they were going to go somewhere because they didn't want Ryan to miss practice. Because, God, coach said. You're done if you don't miss practice. And they would actually call me and go, we really have to go do this. We had somebody die. Can we?
can Ryan
stay with you this weekend? I said, absolutely.
Well,
we hate that.
We were all kind of in this
together.
Yeah.
We were. Totally. And, you know, it's funny. You know these parents... just as well as anybody, and everybody kind of thought the same, and mm-hmm.
We were all competitive. I think our generation was much more. I mean, when I was a little, if you didn't win any good, you didn't freaking play. You didn't have to play an inning. You sit your ass on the bench.
Yeah.
And I remember as a 9 year old, my coach at Raytown. They said everybody was starting to have long hair. He goes, anybody that comes here with the hair all cut off, you'll never sit a game. Who was that? Who was that? Baby, I came the next day, I had no hair. He goes,
mine came naturally.
Well, mine did too, but still, I remember, I'm thinking, man, I don't want to sit. Because back then, we was 9, 10, 11, and 12. You guys probably were too.
Yeah.
And I was 9, and we had 10, 11, and 12-year-olds. And I'm thinking, I ain't going to play much. These kids were pretty good. But he goes, anybody with long hair, if you cut all that off, you're not ever going to sit on my team. And I never did. I never did. But I shaved it, baby.
And we can look up to professional athletes. Our kids can look. They can look at them much differently than we get to look at them today.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
there's not the. We didn't have that's basketball. The LeBron James or mm-hmm. we didn't have. They didn't have the multi-millionaire ball players. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw Whitey Ford on TV tell his manager to go back in the dugout. He wasn't coming out again.
Yeah.
He was pitching the whole game.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, but kids see things differently today
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, growing up in Raytown, we was just, you know, there wasn't like a expensive house. It was just a little house, little three-bedroom house. But we had Roger Maris and Jerry Lumpy lived in a house down the street from us. And they played for the A's back in the day. Roger Maris is, Jesus. Yeah. And they were the nicest dudes, and we were always outside playing.
Oh, remember when Scott was at North?
Rick he caught for Sutcliffe.
Yeah,
Rick Sutcliffe would call him up and say, "Come on."
Rick's daughter in school. He'd do anything for the school and stuff. And
he was a super cool guy.
He was a super cool guy.
But he was an Independence boy, so he grew up like all we did.
Yeah.
But he'd invite Scott to his house, and he met Cal Ripken and all those guys that were in town. And Scott got to go down, and he had a great big house, and he was
down
trying to come back. And he would catch Scott, or Scott would catch him.
When I was about this old, somewhere in that neighborhood, sixth grade, Raleigh Sheldon was a pitcher for the New York Yankees, and he married to Merle McConnell, and we went to the Christian church, and Merle McConnell was our minister, and his daughter had married Raleigh Sheldon. And he pitched for the Yankees. And so a whole group of us we were in the sixth grade, probably, we got to go down and to see the Kansas City A's and the Yankees play. I have a baseball in a vault that after the ball game, we went down, and you're too young to remember or you weren't around here when the Kansas City A's athletic was municipal.
I remember
stadium. So we went down and in a locker room that was probably maybe as big as this lower floor.
It was smaller.
But anyway, Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All those guys, Yogi Bear, and I got a signed baseball. They signed, each one of them signed a baseball, and there were seven or eight of us that went.
Cool.
That is cool.
But it was Tony Richardson, who was the second played second base for him, preached at the church the on one of the Sundays.
Oh my gosh!
But I mean, it was just that small town.
That's small town thing.
I can remember exactly where Roger Maris. My dad. We all lived here. My dad was a principal in Raytown, and I remember not too far from Raytown High School was where Roger Maris.
Yep.
In fact, we were by there. Then. I couldn't quite pick out the house where we were.
Gregory Heights.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah. And our folks, didn't happen often. My folks, if one of my buddies or my folks couldn't go to a Kansas City A's game, we wouldn't do this today. But they take us down, drop us off at Municipal Stadium. We'd watch a Kansas City A's ball game. And then if some reason some parent didn't go or whatever, we would walk down to Arthur Bryant's and have barbecue.
Yep.
And then somebody'd pick us up there.
You
couldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that today.
You wouldn't do that today. But I mean, those were the things that, and whether you were in the 60s or in the 70s or 80s, these kids all have had experiences.
Yeah.
Again, I think sometimes small is
I agree.
Is better than really big.
In my opinion, the sports today for young kids is everybody thinks their sons or daughters or whatever are going to get full ride scholarships.
Right.
Well, that's bull. That's pretty rare. Okay, it's pretty rare.
Or they spend thousands of dollars.
They spend like $1,000 for batting, and special, and that's okay if you got the money to do that. But then they think they have a title to tell you you're not playing my son right. Okay, well, you coach him and see what happens. But very few kids come out of Lee Summit High School. I mean, out of the percentage, very few ever come out and become Major League Baseball players. That's just
a big jump. The other thing that I think has really hurt this generation of kids is these participation trophies. It's like everybody needs a trophy whether you win or lose. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't encourage you to strive to win. If you know you're going to get a trophy the same as the guy that worked really hard to win, why does the guy that was working really hard to win What's his incentive to work hard?
And that was what the Blue Darter Trophy was about, right?
That's right. That was a hustle award.
That was a hustle award.
And wasn't it also like a congeniality or that kind of thing, where you got along?
He actually came out and watched kids, and you would submit a list off of your team.
He was really old.
Jim
Shoot.
He may have done it like when this, I don't remember if this, but.
You would give a person on your team a name on your team, and everybody did, on the league. And he would actually show up, because him and John were really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
He would actually show up and watch those kids play, and would make his determination that way.
Yeah, he did.
How he felt. It wasn't the best player.
No.
It was the player
the most
that had.
Improved,
yeah,
the most,
it
yeah.
was the player that had what he was looking for.
Yeah.
He wanted that hustle. He wanted that positive, blah, blah, blah. It was good.
And Debbie would know this. I wouldn't. Kathy was in our class, but I don't know did she have a brother or anybody that ever played sports? I remember. He was a little,
I think she did have a brother, but I don't remember.
But him and John were really good friends.
And I don't remember if he worked at Western Electric.
I don't know that either.
I just remember seeing him at ball games when I was young or when.
Yeah, I remember him walking out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was a cool thing.
It was a big
everybody would come, whether it was your kid or anybody's, whoever kid. Because most of the time you got it right.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And you were always there, whether it was you had any affiliation with that team or that kid at all. You wanted to see that happen.
And I could be wrong. I don't remember him ever presenting the trophy. Somebody else. I thought he did.
He did for a while. He got pretty old. But I remember when my kids were playing, he actually did.
Yeah, I couldn't remember that.
It was always on field two, right in front of the concession stand.
But you came for that. I mean, if you were in the league and it was your rival, you knew that kid anyway. You wanted to see that happen. You wanted that.
Well, and you didn't know who it was going to be until
that
night.
No, we didn't.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. It was a big deal for
our
kids.
Neither of our kids ever got it.
No.
Ours didn't either.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't go by coaching or winning record, though.
No.
Back to the early days before the Lee Summit Baseball Association, do you think it was the Lee Garvin?
That you got it.
Okay.
That rings a bell, mm-hmm. and it's probably what it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe what this was here. This, I know I got the Hustle Award.
Yeah.
I think it was called
the Lee Garvin League.
But Lee Garvin, I don't remember. Who Lee Garvin?
Well, I know who he was because I wrote a story about him.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So he wasn't a local. Was he a local?
Well, he came from Cleveland, Ohio, but his niece is Sally Sue. He used to work for the police department. Oh, my God, I can't think of her last name right now. But so I found out about him through her, and then I interviewed a relative that knew about him and everything. So he came from Cleveland, but baseball was always his big thing, and he played for those barnstorming baseball teams. He played AAA baseball.
Oh, okay.
He was a catcher, and he was just passionate about it. He's really good. Played for the St. Joe Saints, and he actually made money at it and everything. And then he was the first one to establish a baseball league here. And so he's lost to history, and that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this.
That's so cool.
Again, I've been too young, but Lee Garvin.
That's cool.
He retired from that, got too old to play, of course, and then he worked for the Bank of Lee Summit. Payne, that's who it is.
Sally Payne.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's his niece.
Okay.
Oh, really? Okay,
See, that's cool. Sally. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping a couple of things, because there's no mention of Lee Garvin on that plaque up there, Lee McKeegan. I want to make sure that he's noted for what he did.
Absolutely.
And I want to make sure that the Blue Darter Award is reinstated. I told you that.
Right.
If it's not being given, which I think it probably may not be.
Even
if it's a patch that a kid could have, would be less expensive than
the trophy.
Yeah, because Jim always paid for that.
Yeah, and so we might be able to raise some funds, we could have a fundraiser, we could do something, but I think that kind of tradition is super important for kids. Because those kids that work really hard all summer, they play really hard, and they're not going to be on those competitive teams. They're just a kid that really likes baseball. They grew up in the family, they watch it on TV, their Uncle Bill played, you know, they play catch out in their backyard, all that stuff. I think you've got to recognize those kids in some way.
That's so important, Kathy, because now from an educator's point of view, there are kids struggling out there today for those kind of, and Chapman being a former police officer and the things that he saw. We had it lucky.
Oh my god.
And kids, I used to have, even as a principal, I had people, something would happen and they go, not only somebody.
That's what I tell Debbie, because I'd go in the roll call in Kansas City and I would, because every department sends their stuff to each other every day, and I would read. And she'd go off somewhere with the garage door open, and I said, Lee Summitt ain't Lee Summitt, dude. I don't read these crime things for just something to do in roll call. I look at Lee Summitt. Yeah. I grab theirs and I look at it, I'm thinking, Jesus, there is no way. Yeah. And I'm a cop. There's no way. But it's not. It is not.
We have these kids that, you know, that
horror stories.
Horror stories.
Well, now you've got, they've established that back snack program for kids on the weekend to have food. People don't realize there are kids that go on the weekend with no food.
No, that's
exactly right. Yes. So thank God most of the schools have pantries now.
Yes.
And that's for the kids. But yes, embarrassed.
Yeah,
and so they're throwing the backpacks away.
Yeah, I think they should have the, well, I know last year everybody got free lunch.
Yeah. Well, in inner city they eat breakfast, and I lunch, think they should and dinner them, before just, they send them home.
Well, I think, haven't they already determined this year that somebody has already come out and said all of Lee Summitt is getting free lunch?
Yeah, breakfast and lunch. Yeah, I think they're going to give them breakfast and lunch.
That's good. Because, you know, I was talking to Kaylee actually about it the other day, and I said, she said, yeah, I have to be more, take my lunch more often, I think, because we're not having free lunch this year. And I said, I think you should have free lunch always.
Not because
you can't afford it, but it's there's a stigma attached
well,
to
that's,
it.
Well, that's what I was saying the other day about uniforms. If you all wore the same uniform,
I know.
I've always said that.
Kids need to wear uniforms, and then we don't have the ones that can afford the $200 Nikes and the ones that come.
Because we ran into that with our kids when with the Lakewood crowd and their and BMWs and stuff, you know, and we're driving a 10-year-old Toyota, you know.
When Lakewood came about around 1970, and we just graduated out in college. I was working a part-time job. Lakewood was beginning, and there's lovely people.
Yeah, there are.
But even and then when I started teaching in '73, some of the drugs, it was at Lakewood.
Yeah.
Not left, like in the inner city, but there. And there's lovely people, and it's but it was, and all of a sudden, you had Lee Summitt, and you had.
That's what always irritated me.
Yeah, you didn't live in Lakewood. If you lived in Lakewood, you lived in Lakewood, your separate town. And I go, Lakewood, is that in Lee Summitt? Because it would piss them off.
Is that tape recorder on?
Oh.
It's on. It's on.
Okay. Well, turn it off.
I don't know how.
It's kind of the same way you
are. Okay, let me look.
Not Lakewood.
I got to look and see what the stop is on this, because this is a different one from an Amit Easter.
This has, you know, like they were Mustang champions. Okay,
we're resuming our recording.
No, okay.
And so now we're talking about fabulous baseball pictures.
Yeah. Do you want me to make copies, or do you just, will they return them? Or
well, if you want to make copies, that's the best way to do it, to get them to me. And then they've got my contact information.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
See, the idea is I'm going to be working with the Genealogy Center. I've got exhibit windows. And create a nice big exhibit window with all these pictures and the names and coaches' names and you know, as much in uniforms and things like that, as much stuff as I can possibly get in there.
Sure.
Okay. So that's my goal.
So it's not
that.
To slow you down. What's you got to give me a timeline.
No, just keep going.
I mean, as far as getting to, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have a timeline because now I've got Kim Fritchie's list.
So that's going to take me a little while to get through that, because there's some people that definitely wanted to contact on that.
Okay.
Like Francie
Dyke,
who was the first female umpire. I want to talk to her about it. I know she's just had hip surgery, according to Odie. So
and you said you've already talked to Russ Weber, right?
Yes, I've got his recording.
Okay. And that phone call a while ago was from Doug Harridge. I don't know.
He was going to get back with you. He said he wanted to talk to his son, Roger, who lives over in Seoul, South Korea, but because he wanted to get something. And we'll talk to our boys, too, and see if they're willing to talk to you or if they can just remember something. I will.
Okay, so we're finished with our recording now. I want to thank everyone for participating today. I really appreciate it. Guys, take care. This is Kathy Smith signing out.